Chapter 54. An honest fellow, and speaks his mind so very plainly. Apostrophe, why, the fact is, apostrophe, said Martin, smiling, that being unaccustomed to a freer public, he is used to do so. Apostrophe, I think he had better go with us, apostrophe, returned the other. He may get into some trouble otherwise. This is not a slave state, but I am ashamed to say that a spirit of tolerance is not so common anywhere in these latitudes as the form. We are not remarkable for behaving very temperately to each other when we differ, but to strangers, no, I really think he had better go with us. Apostrophe, Martin called to him immediately, to be of their party, so Cicero and the truck went one way, and they three went another. They walked about the city for 2 or 3 hours, seeing it from the best points of view, and pausing in the principal streets, and before such public buildings as Mr. Bevan pointed out. Night then coming on apace, Martin proposed that they should adjourn to Mrs. Pawkins' establishment for coffee, but in this, he was overruled by his new acquaintance, who seemed to have set his heart on carrying him, though it were only for an hour, to the house of a friend of his who lived hard by. Feeling, however disinclined he was, being weary that it would be in bad taste, and not very gracious, to object that he was unintroduced, when this open-hearted gentleman was so ready to be his sponsor, Martin for once in his life, at all events, sacrificed his own will and pleasure to the wishes of another, and consented with a fair grace. So traveling had done him that much good, already. Mr. Bevan knocked at the door of a very neat house of moderate size, from the parlor windows of which, lights were shining brightly into the now dark street. It was quickly opened by a man with such a thoroughly Irish face, that it seemed as if he ought, as a matter of right and principle, to be in rags, and could have no sort of business, to be looking cheerfully at anybody out of a whole suit of clothes. Commending Mark to the care of this phenomenon, for such he may be said to have been in Martin's eyes, Mr. Bevan led the way into the room which had shed its cheerfulness upon the street, to whose occupants he introduced Mr. Chuzzlewit as a gentleman from England, whose acquaintance he had recently had the pleasure to make. They gave him welcome in all courtesy and politeness, and in less than 5 minutes' time he found himself sitting very much at his ease by the fireside, and becoming vastly well acquainted with the whole family. There were two young ladies, one 18, the other 20, both very slender, but very pretty, their mother, who looked, as Martin thought, much older, and more faded than she ought to have looked, and their grandmother, a little sharp-eyed, quick old woman, who seemed to have got past that stage, and to have come all right again. Besides these, there were the young lady's father, and the young lady's brother, the first engaged in mercantile affairs, the second, a student at college, both, in a certain cordiality of manner, like his own friend, and not unlike him in face. Which was no great wonder, for it soon appeared that he was their near relation. Martin could not help tracing the family pedigree from the two young ladies, because they were foremost in his thoughts, not only from being, as aforesaid, very pretty, but by reason of their wearing miraculously small shoes, and the thinnest possible silk stockings, the which their rocking chairs developed to a distracting extent. There is no doubt that it was a monstrous comfortable circumstance to be sitting in a snug, well-furnished room, warm by a cheerful fire, and full of various pleasant decorations, including 4 small shoes, and the like amount of silk stockings, and yes, why not? The feet and legs there enshrined. And there is no doubt that Martin was monstrous well disposed to regard his position in that light, after his recent experience of the screw, and of Mrs. Pawkins' boarding house. The consequence was that he made himself very agreeable indeed, and by the time the tea and coffee arrived with sweet preserves, and cunning tea cakes in its train, was in a highly genial state, and much esteemed by the whole family. Another delightful circumstance turned up before the first cup of tea was drunk. The whole family had been in England. There was a pleasant thing. But Martin was not quite so glad of this, when he found that they knew all the great dukes, lords, viscounts, marquesses, duchesses, knights, and baronets, quite affectionately, and were beyond everything interested in the least particular concerning them. However, when they asked after the wearer of this or that coronet, and said, was he quite well? Martin answered, yes, oh yes. Never better. And when they said, his lordship's mother, the duchess, was she much changed? Martin said, oh dear no, they would know her anywhere, if they saw her tomorrow. And so got on pretty well. In like manner when the young ladies questioned him touching the goldfish in that Grecian fountain in such and such a nobleman's conservatory, and whether there were as many as there used to be, he gravely reported, after mature consideration, that there must be at least twice as many, and as to the exotics, oh, well, it was of no use talking about them, they must be seen to be believed. Which improved state of circumstances reminded the family of the splendor of that brilliant festival comprehending the whole British peerage and court calendar, to which they were specially invited, and which indeed had been partly given in their honor, and recollections of what Mr. Norris the father had said to the Marquess, and of what Mrs. Norris the mother had said to the Marchioness, and of what the Marquess and Marchioness had both said, when they said that upon their words and honors they wished Mr. Norris the father and Mrs. Norris the mother, and the Mrs. Norris the daughters, and Mr. Norris Jr., the son, would only take up their permanent residence in England, and give them the pleasure of their everlasting friendship, occupied a very considerable time. Martin thought it rather strange, and in some sort inconsistent, that during the whole of these narrations, and in the very meridian of their enjoyment thereof, both Mr. Norris the father, and Mr. Norris Jr., the son, who corresponded, every post, with four members of the English peerage, enlarged upon the inestimable advantage of having no such arbitrary distinctions in that enlightened land, where there were no noblemen but nature's noblemen, and where all society was based on one broad level of brotherly love and natural equality. Indeed, Mr. Norris the father gradually expanding into an oration on this swelling theme, was becoming tedious, when Mr. Bevan diverted his thoughts, by happening to make some causal inquiry relative to the occupier of the next house, in reply to which, the same Mr. Norris the father observed, that that person entertained religious opinions of which he couldn't approve, and therefore he hadn't the honor of knowing the gentleman. Mrs. Norris the mother added another reason of her own, the same in effect, but varying in words, to wit, that she believed the people were well enough in their way, but they were not genteel. Another little trait came out, which impressed itself on Martin forcibly. Mr. Bevan told them about Mark and the Negro, and then it appeared that all the Norrises were abolitionists. It was a great relief to hear this, and Martin was so much encouraged on finding himself in such company, that he expressed his sympathy with the oppressed and wretched blacks. Now, one of the young ladies, the prettiest and most delicate, was mightily amused at the earnestness with which he spoke, and on his craving leave to ask her why, was quite unable for a time to speak for laughing. As soon, however, as she could, she told him that the Negroes were such a funny people, so excessively ludicrous in their manners and appearance, that it was wholly impossible for those who knew them well to associate any serious ideas with such a very absurd part of the creation. Mr. Norris the father, and Mrs. Norris the mother, and Miss Norris the sister, and Mr. Norris Jr. the brother, and even Mrs. Norris Sr. the grandmother, were all of this opinion, and laid it down as an absolute matter of fact, as if there were nothing in suffering and slavery, grim enough to cast a solemn air on any human animal, though it were as ridiculous, physically, as the most grotesque of apes, or morally, as the mildest Nimrod among tuft-hunting Republicans. In short, said Mr. Norris the father, settling the question comfortably, there is a natural antipathy between the races. apostrophe, extending, apostrophe, said Martin's friend, in a low voice, to the cruelest of tortures, and the bargain and sale of unborn generations. Apostrophe, Mr. Norris the son said nothing, but he made a wry face, and dusted his fingers as Hamlet might, after getting rid of Yorick's skull, just as though he at that moment touched a negro, and some of the black, had come off upon his hands. In order that their talk might fall again into its former pleasant channel, Martin dropped the subject, with a shrewd suspicion, that it would be a dangerous theme to revive under the best of circumstances, and again addressed himself to the young ladies, who were very gorgeously attired in very beautiful colors, and had every article of dress on the same extensive scale as the little shoes and the thin silk stockings. This suggested to him that they were great proficients in the French fashions, which soon turned out to be the case, for though their information appeared to be none of the newest, it was very extensive, and the eldest sister in particular, who was distinguished by a talent for metaphysics, the laws of hydraulic pressure, and the rights of humankind, had a novel way of combining these acquirements and bringing them to bear on any subject from millinery to the millennium, both inclusive, which was at once improving and remarkable, so much so, in short, that it was usually observed to reduce foreigners to a state of temporary insanity in 5 minutes. Martin felt his reason going, and as a means of saving himself, besought the other sister, seeing a piano in the room, to sing. With this request she willingly complied, and a bravura concert, solely sustained by the Mrs. Norris, presently began. They sang in all languages except their own. German, French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Swiss, but nothing native, nothing so low as native. For, in this respect, languages are like many other travelers ordinary and commonplace enough at home, but specially genteel abroad. There is little doubt that in course of time the Mrs. Norris would have come to Hebrew if they had not been interrupted by an announcement from the Irishman, who, flinging open the door, cried in a loud voice, General Fladdock. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the sisters, desisting suddenly. The general come back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as they made the exclamation, the general, attired in full uniform for a ball, came darting in with such precipitancy that, hitching his boot in the carpet, and getting his sword between his legs, he came down headlong, and presented a curious little bald place on the crown of his head to the eyes of the astonished company. Nor was this the worst of it, for being rather corpulent and very tight, the general being down, could not get up again, but lay there writing, and doing such things with his boots, as there is no other instance of in military history. Of course there was an immediate rush to his assistance, and the general was promptly raised. But his uniform was so fearfully and wonderfully made, that he came up stiff, and without a bend, in him like a dead clown, and had no command whatever of himself until he was put quite flat upon the soles of his feet, when he became animated, as by a miracle, and moving edgewise, that he might go in a narrower compass, and be in less danger of fraying the gold lace on his epaulettes, by brushing them against anything, advanced with a smiling visage to salute the lady of the house. To be sure, it would have been impossible for the family to testify purer delight and joy than at this unlooked-for appearance of General Fladdock. The general was as warmly received as if New York had been in a state of siege, and no other general was to be got for love or money. He shook hands with the Norrises 3 times all round, and then reviewed them from a little distance as a brave commander might, with his ample cloak drawn forward over the right shoulder, and thrown back upon the left side to reveal his manly breast. And do I then, apostrophe cried the general, once again behold the choicest spirits of my country? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Mr. Norris the father. Here we are, General. apostrophe, then all the Norises pressed round the general, inquiring how and where he had been since the date of his letter, and how he had enjoyed himself in foreign parts, and particularly and above all, to what extent he had become acquainted with the great dukes, lords, viscounts, marquesses, duchesses, knights, and baronets, in whom the people of those benighted countries had delight. Well then, don't ask me, apostrophe said the general, holding up his hand. I was among them all the time, and have got public journals in my trunk with my name printed. He lowered his voice, and was very impressive here among the fashionable news. But, oh, the conventionalities of that amazing Europe! Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Norris the father, giving his head a melancholy shake, and looking towards Martin, as though he would say, I can't deny it, sir. I would if I could. Apostrophe, the limited diffusion of a moral sense in that country. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the general. The absence of a moral dignity in man. Apostrophe, ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, sighed all the Norises, quite overwhelmed with despondency. I couldn't have realized it, apostrophe pursued the general, without being located on the spot. Norris, your imagination is the imagination of a strong man, but you couldn't have realized it, without being located on the spot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, never, apostrophe said Mr. Norris. The exclusiveness, the pride, the form, the ceremony, apostrophe exclaimed the general, emphasizing the article more vigorously at every repetition. The artificial barriers set up between man and man, the division of the human race into court cards and plain cards, of every denomination into clubs, diamonds, spades, anything but art. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the whole family. Too true, general. Apostrophe, but stay. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Norris the father, taking him by the arm. Surely you crossed in the screw, general? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, so I did, apostrophe was the reply. Possible. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the young ladies. Only think. Apostrophe, the general seemed at a loss to understand why his having come home in the screw should occasion such a sensation, nor did he seem at all clear on the subject when Mr. Norris, introducing him to Martin, said, a fellow passenger of yours, I think? Apostrophe, apostrophe, of mine? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the general, no. Apostrophe, he had never seen Martin, but Martin had seen him, and recognized him, now that they stood face to face, as the gentleman who had stuck his hands in his pockets towards the end of the voyage, and walked the deck with his nostrils dilated. Everybody looked at Martin. There was no help for it. The truth must out. I came over in the same ship as the general, apostrophe said Martin, but not in the same cabin. It being necessary for me to observe strict economy, I took my passage in the steerage. Apostrophe, if the general had been carried up bodily to a loaded cannon, and required to let it off that moment, he could not have been in a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.